Blog Talk Radio.
And this is Wolf Radio, hosted by Dr. Breck. And we are currently waiting on the beginning of this episode for our guest, the Honorable Al Stankard, world-renowned travel writer and poet, man of letters, man of many qualities. He will be joining us shortly. And to begin the show, I'd like to express my general distaste and immediate love-hate relationship with Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio has many good qualities to it, but it also has many awful qualities to it. And it is these qualities that I had forgotten about, pro and con, prior to the beginning of this whole operation. Al, are you on the show with us?
Hey, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. It's good to have you on the show. And
yeah, great. Are we live?
Yes, this is going to be a 30-minute show, and we're going to. I'm pleased to welcome Al Stankard to the podcast. Am I pronouncing your name correctly, Al?
Yes, you are.
Excellent. And so I'm going to start off by talking a little bit about your background. You are a writer and world traveler.
Yes.
Currently working with Jason Kessler on the Unite the Right rally version 2.0. So I'm going to ask you a few questions, Al. First of all, you released a video today. So what was Malta like?
Oh, man, Malta. Good question. I was there a long time ago at this point, almost 10 years ago. It's very strange. It's right in the middle of the Mediterranean. And it's like a rock. It's a very barren island, mostly filled with pig farms and stuff like that. The northern coast of it is sort of like a Cancun for Europeans. They go there in the summer to party. I was surprised, though. The people there are very xenophobic. They seem to hate the European tourists and the, you know, Muslim Arabs, because in Malta they're all Christian. Even though they're ethnically, genetically, you know, fairly Arab, and they hate the African migrants too.
I can't think of the name of the guy who was addressing the New Right meetings in London that about 10 years ago when he was a Maltese nationalist. Did you have any contact with them while you were in Malta?
No, although I think
it was Imperium Europa. Yeah,
yes, exactly.
Europa was his group, yeah.
What was his name again, though?
It's escaping me, too.
Let me look it up. Norman Lowell.
Norman Lowell, the arch troll. I really admired him as a speaker. But let's go on. You know, you're quite a traveler, and I don't think people see this, like, when you're walking down the street. But
yep.
And I've never met you personally, but I look at you in your videos, and you can see this guy's been somewhere. You know, it's in my business, you have to size people up constantly, and you look a little different from perhaps the regular type of individual. Like, you're a little bit more wiry, like there's more to you than, you know, what one might say the average hippie.
Yep.
And so you've traveled quite extensively, and I seem to remember there being some quote about traveling being the best cure for xenophobia or something like that. Do you find
that to be the case?
No, it's a quote. I think it's a Mark Twain quote.
Yeah,
and,
okay, so I could, yeah, I could riff on that, I think. I would say that it's certainly a cure for being locked in a specific context and perspective, in the bigotry that may engender. But it's, how can I say, it also opens your eyes up to the broader reality that, you know, will often serve to refute political correctness and refute universalism and globalism. Not to say I don't, you know, have empathy for different people of the world, and not to say that I don't see a certain common human thread uniting us all. But it doesn't really at all put a dent in anti-globalist and anti-white critiques and so forth.
I had a I went to a farm this evening that was owned by some of my South African clients, and they were having a gathering to mourn some of their relatives that had recently been slaughtered in South Africa. So
yep.
I thought that was interesting. That's an example, I think, a little bit of what you're talking about there. People never really travel farther than their prejudices in some ways, I think.
Well said.
Anyway, let's talk about, I want to get to one more deal before we talk about Unite the Right. And you really remind me of my mentor, William Roberts, who was a traveler and a hitchhiker and backpacker in the 1970s. And,
William Roberts? So who's this?
William Roberts was one of the architects of the Ron Paul campaign's central tactic, which was, I've talked to you about him before, but
central
tactic was to work in the Republican Party committees to accomplish things, and he actually got this tactic from David Duke, because David Duke had, I don't know where David Duke got it from, but David Duke learned how to win elections by stacking his people onto Republican committees that were, in other words, nobody else wanted these jobs. So David Duke got his people onto these committees, and when the Republican Party was discounting their importance, and that's how he managed to win elections. It wasn't actually campaigning, going out there and waving signs and all that. He was able to insert his cadre into the party, the state party, and successfully, you know, win nominations. And he was a state rep, and then he was a United States rep, and it was quite a unique tactic. But anyway, Will was a very intelligent, very well read guy, and he had a talk show, which he wanted to be an educative show. And he gave a lot of talks and was very influential for a while in the Ozark area, the greater Ozark area. But what I'm connecting him to you is that he was an intellectual who could never quite communicate coherently with his base, not in the sense that he could not speak coherently, but that his base was incapable of understanding it, because he...
Interesting.
He couldn't quite get across to the rank and file what he was actually talking about. You know, they would glom onto a piece of what he was saying and say, oh, that makes sense to me or whatever. But the greater thrust, he was constantly frustrated to the time of his death by simply being incapable of expressing himself to the satisfaction of his listeners and his audience. So
yeah, I mean,
my question,
I hope that I can succeed at some point a little bit. But I almost wonder if it's simply because he said he traveled quite a bit. And the thing is, you know, they say knowledge is power and stuff like that. I think it's true, but also it might prevent you from being exclusively beholden to a certain perspective. And I see in the alt-right, you know, there's this guy called Brundlefly who is co-host on Luke Ford sometimes. And, you know, I like him, whatever, I get it. But he despises me because I have not lived my whole life, you know, trapped in the middle American terrarium, you know, with some shitty wage cuck job and with some wife that probably hates him. So he resents me for this because I don't speak strictly in terms of how the world looks from that perspective.
Well, and you know, a lot of that comes down to I pretty much started at a very young age in extreme rightist movements,
Yep.
and
Same here, to be honest.
I have a successful business, and I have a good clientele, and so forth and so on. But at the end
Yep.
of the day, I'm not a normie, and I could fit in with normies, but I have no desire to, you know? And because
Yep.
I saw how that works with the Ron Paul campaign.
Yep.
And hence my frustration with contemporary politics and my interest in Unite the Right rally.
Yep.
So my first question on Unite the Right, are you going to be one of the designated speakers?
That's a
Or do
good
you
question.
know? Do you know who's going to speak?
Well, yeah, so I think I probably could if I wanted to. But in the past few months, I've been quite busy trying to find a job because I went back to school. So I've been doing that more than being so active politically. But I've been trying to help out with planning in the ways that I can. But as far as I know, I forget exactly who's speaking. There's this guy, Kashi Vikas, who I think I told you about, right?
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting, because it's Vika, and he is actually an Indian of East Indian of some kind, and he is into you might call him into a lot of the bleeding edge of the certain rightist edge, like vaporware and all that kind of stuff, and
Yes,
so
vaporware, you're right.
yeah, so. He is one of the proposed speakers, apparently.
Yeah, I have some reservations about it, though, to be honest. I don't think he's motivated by the correct reasons for wanting to be involved in this.
You think he's just trying to get followers, or like
I have no idea,
steal
to be
some of the
honest.
platform?
Well, the thing is, when I first met him online and in real life, I found him very perplexing. He has this very abstruse argot, this very abstruse framework of using words like aesthetics and other continental philosophical terms, and sort of making diagrams out of them, and presenting it as inscrutable and as something which bears such magnificent truth that, you know, he can't help us to understand it, and only he can understand it, and he sort of wields it as a scepter, you know, to get people to basically follow him.
Well, you did an interesting video today, I believe it was on, or recently, on exposing frauds. And I feel like you're in a position to do this because you're a very genuine person. And I say that not as
I
an
try to be.
empty compliment. I say that not as an empty compliment, but because you've traveled, and you've traveled hard, not as a tourist. I have a great loathing for tourism, but you've traveled as
As
a
do I.
traveler. Yeah,
Yeah.
and I guess Hakim Bey or someone wrote up quite a bit about the difference between the traveler and the tourist or whatever. But in any case, like I said, you have a unique ability to. So it would be interesting to see the speaker's roster for the Unite the Right version 2.0, and hope.
Yeah, I can get it. I sort of forget exactly who's speaking, but I believe David Duke is slated to speak.
Well, hopefully you might possibly be on that roster. Work and school permitting. What do you think about, you made an interesting reply to the Daily Beast and that trolling by that vanguardist who was talking about violence and talking about minimalism for violence. Do you think that, now Al has dropped off the call, but I'm going to continue with the question because it's relevant and hopefully he'll be back on in a second. And that's, I was going to ask him, what do you think about Kessler using Hitler's rules for doing rallies? And this is a fairly important question because one has to understand that the idea of the rally is the basic initial step, Pell won, to political power. And with the inception of political power, one needs to be in a position to take action in manifold directions to accomplish things for the betterment of the state. And while that might seem rehearsed, it's not. It's just the way it is. So Hitler's rules for doing rallies, stuff like putting the women up front, absorbing in various methods for violence and so on. In other words, you prepare for violence and you prepare for violence in such a way that you will not be seen as the initiator of violence, and moreover, you will be seen as the individual who was the aggrieved party. Your rally, if attacked, you put your women out front and you put them in a position where they understand that they will have to absorb the initial brunt, and should they be attacked, this will steal the resolve of the men and make their anger more righteous when counterattacking. The women are attacked first, and the women have to understand that. It might be an implicit understanding or something to that matter, but that is the basis of inquiring whether using Hitler's rules would indeed be desirable. And lastly, since I appear to have lost Al, I'm going to talk about, you back, Al?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's my fault.
Okay. We have 10 minutes left, so I'm going to get to the questions I have for you regarding Unite the Right. And I was just talking about whether you think, obviously you want to avoid all relations to Hitler, but Hitler had a lot of good ideas for holding rallies and keeping them nonviolent.
Interesting.
Placing stuff so where the Nazis appeared to be the victims. Like the women would be placed out front, so they would be attacked first. Stuff like that. They would organize.
That is very fascinating.
Organize the rallies so the women were the victims of attacks and stuff like that. It's not And, you know, people think of the Nazis as just tearing into people and beating up people and stuff like that. So I'm just wondering how much attention, because I feel like Hitler's rules are like for the right what Alinsky's rules are for the left. And
so you want to know my thoughts on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so well, firstly, I would say we don't want to really necessarily model ourselves off of Hitler and the Nazis, because I feel that they lost for a reason. I don't believe that global capitalism can be defeated.
I think the strategy is off, but I think a lot of the tactics are sound. Especially
maybe.
In their early
either way, I think
conception.
I think it's important to note that as with the first Unite the Right and with this one, we don't want there to be any violence. We literally don't want anybody to get hurt. We don't want any bricks thrown at us or anything. However, we realize that, you know, we can't necessarily prevent ourselves from being injured, even if we tie our hands behind our backs. And so the silver lining with that is that, you know, with our potential, God forbid, bloodshed, that might wake people up, wake up, you know, the masses to the fact that we are not the aggressors at all in any way, shape, or form, not locally, and nor do we have any violent, you know, national intent at all whatsoever. How does that answer your question?
Yeah, and as I've brought up to you before, and I'll just riff on this a little bit myself, I feel like nonviolence is absolutely the way to go, as you say. And I feel you have to have a radical discipline in the ranks and organization to pull that off. So, you know, I'm hoping that will be somehow enforced. But, you know, it's...
Luckily, it seems that the alt-right entertainment establishment has already done the heavy lifting for us. All the people who are looking to fight are not coming.
As far
as I know, most of them don't want to come at this point.
Here's my last question for you, and this is regarding the aftermath of Unite the Right.
Yep.
How do you feel in the event of everything going well and Unite the Right meeting its goals about the possibility of future compromise? Because people think about compromise in the same sense as success often, because a success, a victory for this side often means that the other side must concede something, but also that the weaker side, which would be our side, must also concede something. In other words, you can force a concession from the establishment, but we must concede along with our victory as well. So,
yes.
What do you think about the possibility of compromise, and how do you think that would emerge? Because I feel like go ahead.
Yeah, these are great questions. I would say that, firstly, again, I don't think that we can win what many, you know, neo-fascists and alt-righters desire, what they think they desire. I think what we can win is some wiggle room for white identity, for equal rights for white people, and things like that. An end to anti-white rhetoric as a permissible strategy for example, the Democratic Party, or for, you know, charlatans in the university ivory tower world. So I think we're trying to get wiggle room. We're not trying to create a Fourth Reich. We're not trying to create some fascist imperium. I want things to be basically not that much different from the way they are now, but an end to this, this, you know, Tower of Babel, like, you know, war on whiteness and war on so-called racism to end. Everything else can stay the same. I hope that
the U.S. remains peaceful and democracy remains the path forward. And I hope that, you know, many aspects of progressive politics can continue forward unmolested by any political agitation on our parts.
Well, I think that's very well said. Yeah. That's a really good statement. And so in the final minutes of the show, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I just want to add that Jason basically feels the same as I do. I'm basically hitching my wagon to him because we agree with these things, I think. We're not trying to force a revolution. We're not trying to do anything like that. We just want there to be a level playing field and equality between people and peoples. But the problem is that there's very few of us like this who are willing to put our necks out for change.
Centrism
has hitherto
a lot of it.
Sorry?
Is centrism. I said for centrism.
Percenterism.
I would say that you're taking a very centralistic.
Yes. But the problem is that in order to you know build a coalition, Jason has to, you know, for pragmatic purposes, he's been having to, you know, like bend over a little bit to get people who are willing to put their necks out also to work with us, and so it's unfortunate seeing people with bad intents or misguided intents, you know, altering what is ultimately a white civil rights rally.
Absolutely. So in the final minutes of the show, do you have anything you want to plug at the moment? You're a philosophy student at this time. You're looking for employment currently, but you're also a writer and poet. So do you have anything personally that you want to plug?
Yeah, I guess my blog is acidwrite.info, I-N-F-O. And I've written a few books, and I have a YouTube channel. Check it out. My Twitter handle is Dracnats. And most importantly, come to the White Civil Rights Rally in Washington, D.C. on August 11th and 12th next month. It's really, really important. It's going to be hopefully a watershed moment in the history of this country and indeed the world. I think there's a very serious possibility that not only will Trump and the White House and Fox News say both sides, but they will say, okay, these guys are seriously right. Charlottesville last year was a terrible injustice perpetrated against us. And yeah.
I'm thinking of coming. I have a little problem because I might have to bring a white woman with me. And that might be problematic.
Honestly, let me say something in the next 2 minutes, last 2 minutes. I've been in New York City quite a bit.
We got a minute.
And I've been meeting all these like black people and half Puerto Ricans and stuff. Like this black female who's like, you know, a pretty serious fascist. She's an intellectual fascist, but she's a lawyer. She's brilliant. And honestly, it's like this is not about, we're not against races, we're against anti-whitism. So your values are totally in line. You're part white, right? So, I mean,
yes,
fucking A.
Yes, and I'm very opposed to miscegenation, but I'm only attracted to white women.
You're not
so
white,
you imagine my problem in life is pretty profound. But in any case, if I can come up with the money, I'm planning to come out, and I look forward to meeting you in person. I look forward to seeing the goals of Unite the Right met at some point, and I look forward to hopefully having more interesting guests on Wolf Radio and hopefully have you back on the show, Al, as we get it rolling and we pick up listeners and viewers, et cetera, et cetera. So I really appreciate you being on the show tonight, Al, and we'll talk. We'll see you next time.
Cool, man. Yeah, thank you. Okay, see you.